Hi, y'all. This is Vincent from Gone Cold Podcast, Texas True Crime. Gone Cold will be featured at CrimeCon 2022 in Las Vegas, and we hope to see you there. Come and hang out with us and Erica on Podcast Row. In the meantime, check out some of our latest episodes, like the puzzling disappearance of Rachel Cook in 2002, and the 1997 abduction and slaying of little Denadia Thompson. Hope to see y'all in Vegas. Texas is best known for the scorching heat, Longhorn steers, Willie Nelson, and good barbecue. Beyond Big Bend and big trucks, however, lies something dark, big crime. Texas's violent crime rates are higher than the national average, and many of the most unthinkable and horrific crimes have gone cold. Hi y'all, my name is Vincent. Join me as we dive deep into the facts and theories of one of the 20,000 unsolved Texas cases each week. Gone Cold Podcast Texas True Crime began in 2017 with the recently solved 1974 murder of Carla Walker in Fort Worth, and we're currently exploring the 1993 murder of Corpus Christi's Kathleen Suckley, whose three-year-old son witnessed her brutal murder. The alleged murderer lawyered up quickly and walked free, and the ripple effects took another victim decades later. To listen to those and many other stories of unsolved and missing persons cases, search Gone Cold Podcast Texas True Crime wherever you fulfill your podcast needs, and help us bring justice to families.
Southern Fraud True Crime covers cases that are not suitable for young listeners, and there may also be some explicit language used. Listener discretion is advised. We revere our sports idols as gods in this country. They are adored, loved, idolized, but so often painfully human anyways. Lorenzen Wright, the 6'11" literal and fabled giant, pushed his body to the limits, but his heart even further. He was the quintessential hometown hero, giving back so much to his community. The father of six was also a devoted family man whose own mother loved him to all distraction. When he disappeared in July 2010, she refused to give up or remain silent as she watched her son's case go cold. So many successful athletes struggle with who they can trust once they make it big. The shocking story of Lorenzen Wright's tragic death is a painful parable for how we venerate our beloved athletes. They are larger than life, and yet can be felled by the people they trust the most. Welcome to episode 149, The Murder of Lorenzen Wright. Lorenzen Vern Wright was born on November 4, 1975 in the college town of Oxford, Mississippi, located 85 miles southeast of Memphis, Tennessee. When Lorenzen was still very young, his parents Deborah and Herb divorced and his father moved to Memphis. Lorenzen split his time between the two cities, something he didn't mind doing, as he considered both home. He was proud to be from Memphis. His longtime friend Ruiz told Sports Illustrated that Lorenzen was so proud to say, "This is where I'm from." He said he liked the music and the churches and the barbecue joints. Lorenzen's father Herb was a great basketball player, but he never made it to the NBA like his son eventually would. Instead, Herb worked for the Memphis Parks Department. When Lorenzen was just 7 years old, Herb found himself one day having to kick some kids out of a gym. One of them left angry, so he left and got a gun and came back and shot Herb in the back. He was paralyzed and never walked again. But that did not take away his passion for basketball. Herb continued coaching and later opened up a car dealership. Even when he was young, Lorenzen was a big guy. By the time he was in the eighth grade, he was 6'7", His mother, Deborah, once told the Commercial Appeal, quote, "I used to pray at night, Jesus, please don't let this child grow anymore. I can't afford it." She said he got too big to even sleep in a bed. He was sleeping on the floor. He had to dress in grown men's clothes. That's why he got best dressed in school. He had to wear grown men's clothes because they didn't make little boys' clothes in his size. As an adult, Lorenzen was 6'11" tall with a shoe size of 16.5. He weighed in at 255 pounds, which Sports Illustrated described as being mostly extravagant muscle. And he was a very attractive young man as well. The late owner of the Memphis Grizzlies, Michael Heisley, said Lorenzen had movie star looks. To top it all off, Lorenzen was a great person. Former NBA player Elliot Perry said he was fantastic, this big guy with this humble spirit. Lorenzen's height was part of what made him so successful as a basketball player. He was a forward center, which basically meant he could play both forward and center positions. Lorenzen was a versatile player. Sports Illustrated journalist John Wertheim wrote that he could take over when necessary, but was perfectly comfortable bringing his energy and athleticism to bear as a rebounder, shot blocker, and dirty work warrior. He was known as an amiable teammate, a natural leader, a spindle on which his teams were wound. When Lorenzen was 16 years old, his basketball team went to play a tournament in Nashville. While there, the team was introduced to the coach's daughter, 21-year-old college student Shara Robinson. Shara and Lorenzen began hanging out as friends, with things eventually turning into a long-distance relationship, since Lorenzen was living with his mother in Oxford. His feelings for Shara were so serious that he asked to live with his father for his senior year. Both parents agreed, and Lorenzen moved to Memphis, where he attended Booker T. Washington High School. Lorenzen and Shara later married and had 7 children together, 4 sons and 3 daughters, Lorenzen Jr., Lauren, twins Lamar and Shamar, Lawson, Sierra, and Sophia. While Lorenzen played basketball, Shara cared for the children. At Booker T. Washington High School in Memphis, Lorenzen's talent for basketball only continued to grow. He averaged 28 points and 19 rebounds a game. Those statistics are incredible for a high school student, where the average player typically scores around 8 to 10 points a game and gets 2 to 4 rebounds. Lorenzen was miles above the average player. He was a star. Before the season was over, Lorenzen had several scholarship offers from different colleges. He chose to stay local and attend Memphis State, which is now the University of Memphis. Lorenzen played 2 seasons with the Memphis State Tigers, during which he started all 64 games, with averages of 35 minutes on the court, 16 points scored, and 10 rebounds a game. He may have played longer for the Tigers, but the NBA came knocking before he had the chance. The 1996 NBA draft was held on June 26th. The Los Angeles Clippers had the 7th pick, and they chose Lorenzen. He was the 4th tallest and the youngest guy on the team by at least 2.5 years. Other notable players drafted that year included Allen Iverson, the overall 1st pick, Kobe Bryant, the 13th pick, and Steve Nash, the 15th. While playing for the Clippers, Lorenzen developed the howl. His father Herb describes it as, quote, "You know, you get a rebound and let out a howl, elbows out. Every rebound is supposed to be mine." Lorenzen was so good at rebounding that during the 1998-99 season, he ranked the 6th best NBA player when it came to total rebound percentage. In the 3 seasons he spent with the Clippers, Lorenzen earned more than $5 million playing 194 games, during which he averaged 26 minutes on the court, 8 points, and 7 rebounds. In August 1999, Lorenzen was traded by the Clippers to the Atlanta Hawks, where his pay doubled. In the 2 seasons Lorenzen was a Hawk, he played 146 games, during which he averaged 22 minutes on the court, 9 points, and 5 rebounds. In June of 2001, he was traded to the Memphis Grizzlies. a decision applauded by Memphians, who were more than happy to have a local on the team. Lorenzen's friend Dennis told Sports Illustrated that it was hometown hero stuff. During his 5 seasons with the Grizzlies, Lorenzen earned around $33 million, played 336 games, averaging 27 minutes on the court, scoring around 10 points and 7 rebounds per game. He was able to spoil Shara and the kids with a fleet of luxury cars, designer clothes, a nanny, and numerous extravagant mansions, including one custom-built in 2006. Lorenzen and Shara paid $2.7 million for the 12,475-square-foot, 17-room house to be built on 12 acres of land east of Memphis. But Lorenzen didn't hoard his wealth like some millionaires. Sports Illustrated reported that he spread his wealth around town like a crop duster, buying homes and cars and paying for friends and relatives to go to college. He hired a friend to be a driver, whose main objective was to take his father Herb, who used a wheelchair, to make it to the Grizzlies' home games. He also hired friends to be part of his security. He wanted to help his friends and family by letting them share in some of his success. Lorenzen didn't just help his friends and family either. He took care of the community as well. He bought shoes for high school teams and underwrote a youth league. He hosted a week-long summer basketball camp for Memphis youth and served as a member of the All-Star Reading Team for 3 years. And when a 9-year-old Memphis boy named Travis Butler was found living with his mother's corpse for a month because he was scared to be put in foster care, Lorenzen and 3 other Memphis NBA players set up a trust for him. It was for these reasons, beyond his incredible career as an athlete, that Lorenzen became the face of Memphis. And that's why it made things much sadder when in August of 2006, Lorenzen left Memphis after signing as a free agent with the Atlanta Hawks, which came with a significant pay cut, bringing in only around $3.2 million in 2 seasons. It was clear that Lorenzen's body was starting to decline. He missed 6 games due to plantar fasciitis, 9 games due to a strained hamstring, and 1 game due to the flu. In total, he played 80 games, averaging 13 minutes on the court, scoring around 2 points and 3 rebounds per game. In February 2008, the Atlanta Hawks made a few trades to build the team up before playoffs. One of the players traded was Lorenzen, who went to the Sacramento Kings. In his brief time there, Lorenzen played 13 minutes in 5 games and scored 2 points. In September 2008, Lorenzen signed as a free agent again with the Cleveland Cavaliers, bringing in $1.3 million. During the 2008-2009 season, he played 17 games, averaging 7 minutes on the court, scoring around only 1.4 points and 1.5 rebounds per game. Lorenzen did not stay with the Cavaliers or join another team for the next season. Instead, he officially retired from the NBA after a very successful career, during which he had played a total of 18,835 minutes in 793 games, including the playoffs, and scored 6,191 points and 4,943 rebounds, and earned $55 million. While most players stay in the NBA for an average of 4.5 years, Lorenzen had played for 13, almost triple the average. But those years really took a toll on his body. By the time Lorenzen retired, he was only 34 years old, and according to Sports Illustrated, his body and skills were eroding in tandem. Whenever I see or hear someone complaining about overpaid millionaire athletes, I always wonder if they know the true statistics. Do they understand the physical cost? And could a celebrity athlete ever truly have a second career after the glory days of living his dream? The story of Steve McNair, episode 123, comes to mind. He opened a restaurant and was trying to build his second act before he too was murdered so tragically at 36 years old, close to the same age that Lorenzen was. I'm going to pause now for a short commercial break. Lorenzen had also endured a personal tragedy during his time with the NBA. On March 1st, 2003, Lorenzen and Shara's daughter, Sierra, died of SIDS just 2 weeks shy of her first birthday. Shara later said, quote, "I don't think Lorenzen ever recovered from it. I dug into my spiritual grounding, and Lorenzen didn't have that to dig into." And it couldn't have helped that Lorenzen and Shara's relationship was so tumultuous. They would break up, get back together, then break up again. A family friend, Ian, told the Los Angeles Times, quote, "He was in love with her. She had a grip on him." The couple called it quits for good in early 2009, around the same time Lorenzen stopped playing basketball. At this time, Shara and Lorenzen were in debt for $3 million, and they had two houses repossessed, one in Atlanta and the other their custom-built place in Memphis. Lorenzen had made a lot of money during his NBA career, but by the end, he was broke. Like we talked about in last week's episode with Lance Herndon, this situation is very common for newly rich people. Athletes, actors, rappers, lottery winners, and so many more often just don't know how to manage the insane amount of money they are suddenly making. In February 2010, Lorenzen and Shara's divorce was finalized. After Lorenzen was killed, Shara told Sports Illustrated about the reason behind their split. She detailed Lorenzen's penchant for juggling women, as well as what she called his abusive nature. She told the Commercial Appeal that Lorenzen had a problem with keeping his hands to himself. After months of no issues, he would show his dark side, she said. It always happened when his back was against the wall, or one of his lies just, you know, was exposed, she explained. There was at least one incident resulting in the police being called. In August 2005, officers showed up at Shara and Lorenzen's place in Memphis and found her with a cut on her hand and abrasions across her jaw. There were no arrests or charges filed. While speaking to Sports Illustrated following Lorenzen's death, Shara said she didn't press charges back in 2005 because she wanted to protect him. Those who knew Lorenzen openly admitted that he was an adulterer, but they had a difficult time believing he was abusive. Obviously, we have no way of really knowing what went on behind closed doors, but friends and family who were close to Lorenzen insist that he was not violent in his marriage or otherwise. If anything, Shara was the one who took things to a physical place. A friend named Michael told the Commercial Appeal about a time when he and Lorenzen were in an RV with dancers. Shara found out and showed up to check things out. Before she got inside to see what was going on, Lorenzen jumped out of the window and ran. Shara never saw him, but she did see Michael and the dancers. She got so angry, she chased the dancers off, tore Michael's shirt off, then destroyed the inside of the RV. And as you'll find out later, this was not the only time Shara would become violent. Following their divorce, Shara stayed in their 5,400-square-foot rented house in Memphis, while Lorenzen and his friend Michael moved into a rented condo in the suburbs of Atlanta. Even though they were living 400 miles apart, Lorenzen remained a doting father and still saw his six children quite frequently. As part of the divorce, Lorenzen was required to pay nearly $27,000 a month in alimony and child support. That's more than $320,000 a year. And he didn't have any money coming in, so he quickly fell behind on payments. However, prior to his death, Shara did stand up for him, telling people that he always took care of her and the kids. He may not always pay through the court system, but she still got the money. Going into the summer of 2010, Lorenzen was feeling kind of lost, like his compass was failing him. His relationship with Shara, whom he had been with since he was 16 years old, was strained, if anything. And so was his basketball career, the only job he had ever had. He told his friends that he didn't want to give up on his career just yet. He might go overseas and play for a team there. He wanted to keep his options open with his career and Shara. According to Lorenzen's children, he was trying to get Shara back. His oldest daughter, Lauren, told the Los Angeles Times that a few months after their divorce, things between Shara and Lorenzen were much better. Lorenzen even said he wanted to remarry Shira, telling his kids every day that he was working to win her back. Which sadly brings us to July 18th, 2010, when Lorenzen flew from Atlanta to Memphis to see his family. He watched his son play basketball and attended a baby shower. In the evening hours, he hung out with a close friend named Phil. At around 10 p.m., Phil dropped Lorenzen off at Shira's place in Memphis. Everything seemed fine at the time. Lorenzen's plan was to leave the next day, taking the kids with him. They would drive back to Atlanta with a friend named Jeremy, stopping at Six Flags on the way. The next morning, Lorenzen's friend Jeremy showed up at Shira's to pick him and the kids up for the drive back to Atlanta. But Shira said he wasn't there. Jeremy called Lorenzen several times, but received no answer. Jeremy called around to see if anyone knew where Lorenzen was, and no one did. That's when Lorenzen's roommate, Michael, decided to call Shira and ask what was going on. According to the LA Times, quote, "She suggested Lorenzen had run off with a lady friend. When Jeremy asked her what was going on, she told him that Lorenzen was, quote, probably in one of his little holes," and ended the message with LOL. Over the next few days, Lorenzen's mother Deborah tried calling and texting her son, but she also got no response, and that was very unlike Lorenzen. He was extremely close to his mother. He talked to her multiple times a day, so to go multiple days without talking to her was out of character. On July 22nd, after 3 days of no contact, Deborah filed a missing persons report, warning the officer, quote, "When y'all find him, it's not going to be good." Investigators went to the last place Lorenzen was seen, Shira's place. She told them that on July 18th, Lorenzen left there at 10:30 p.m. with an unknown person in an unknown vehicle. When asked if anyone would want to harm Lorenzen, Shira told officers that he had no problems, concerns, or enemies. With not much to go on, authorities began searching for Lorenzen, and news reports about his disappearance started pouring out. Memphians were terribly upset over the news. They couldn't lose a black icon. Not again. On July 26th, reporters showed up at Shira's door to ask for a comment. She teared up as she told them, quote, "I'm not going to believe anything other than he's fine now." The next day, Shira met with the detectives to tell them some information that might help the case. She told them that Lorenzen was involved in major criminal activity and had actually left her home at July 18th with a shoebox of drugs and cash. Before he left, she said she heard him talking on a track phone about how he was going to flip something for $110,000. Shira also told investigators that a few weeks before Lorenzen's disappearance, some men had shown up looking for him. On July 27th, a Germantown, Tennessee dispatcher told their supervisor about a call they had received 8 days prior at 12:12 a.m. on July 19th. They hadn't reported it before, but now felt it was relevant. Maybe the caller had been Lorenzen. The dispatcher played the call for their supervisor. Immediately after answering the call, there were two gunshots and a man's voice yelling, "Hey, goddamn!" When the dispatcher asked, "What's your emergency?" all they were met with was another gunshot, then two more, then six more. The dispatcher asked the caller, "Hello, hello, can you hear me?" There was no answer, and the call ended, so the dispatcher tried to call back, but they got no answer. So they tried to figure out where the call was coming from, but they weren't able to find the location of the call because it wasn't within Germantown's jurisdiction. After hearing the call, the supervisor passed along the information to detectives, who listened to the call and felt it could be a credible lead. They used cell phone pings to determine the call originated from a secluded field near the TPC Southwind golf course. On July 28th, cadaver dogs started searching the area where the 911 call originated. At one point, they were looking near a shortcut only locals would know about called Callis Cutoff, which is just west of Hacks Cross Road. Lorenzen, once a local, knew about the cutoff and had actually spent a lot of time there hanging out with friends. At around 2:30 p.m., police found Lorenzen's body in the cutoff. Due to all of the rain, heat, and scavenging animals, his body was decomposed so severely that it was mummified in some parts and skeletonized in others. It weighed only 57 pounds, nearly 200 less than Lorenzen had weighed in life only weeks prior. His gold necklace and expensive watch were still on his body. The earth beneath looked scorched. Lorenzen's mother, Deborah Marion, showed up to the crime scene after the police set up a perimeter. She tried to get through, but a female officer stopped her. Deborah later told Sports Illustrated, quote, "It's a good thing I wasn't wearing my running shoes. Ain't no way she would have caught me. She don't know me. I'm from Mississippi, baby." During the autopsy, the medical examiner found evidence of at least 5 gunshot wounds from at least 2 guns, a small caliber and a medium caliber. 2 on the left side of his head, 2 in the chest, and 1 in his right forearm. The examiner determined that due to the level of decomposition, additional gunshot wounds cannot be excluded. One thing was for certain, though. Lorenzen was most likely dead within seconds. On August 4th, Lorenzen's funeral was held at the FedEx Forum. NBA players, friends, family, including Shara, and thousands of locals attended. Memphis Mayor A.C. Wharton was one of the many people to speak. He told the crowd, "Lorenzen was a young man who never forgot who he was, where he came from, the values that shaped him, and the people who encouraged him along the way. Lorenzen's story was one of those special Memphis stories where a man is able to transcend his roots, even while he represents those roots proudly." Wharton vowed that justice would be done. I'm going to pause now to hear a word from today's sponsors. I thought I knew my Aunt Janie better than anyone. One day we were chatting, and I heard a story I've never heard before. That got me wondering, how many other stories don't I know? That's why I got Janie's StoryWorth. StoryWorth is an online service that helps you and your loved ones connect through sharing stories and memories, and preserves them for years to come. Every week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question of your choice. Each unique prompt asks questions you've never thought of, like, what's some of the best advice your mother gave you? I loved hearing about how Granny made sure her daughters knew how to make Mother's Day special for her and for themselves by making it a whole family holiday, a celebration of all the generations of mothers. After 1 year, StoryWorth compiles all those questions and stories, including photos, into a beautiful keepsake book the whole family can share for generations. This isn't the first time I've gifted StoryWorth to so many wonderful family and friends over the years. It is an amazing keepsake that they will love and you can enjoy together. Give all the moms in your life a meaningful gift you'll both cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, for a limited time, you'll save $10 on your first purchase when you go to StoryWorth.com/southernfried. That's StoryWorth.com/southernfried to save $10 on your first purchase. StoryWorth.com/southernfried. Did you know that only 9% of plastic actually gets recycled? No matter how much we put in our recycling bin, at Grove Collaborative, they believe it's time to ditch single-use plastics for good. Grove carries hundreds of products aimed at replacing single-use plastics across your home and personal care routine. And by 2025, Grove will be 100% plastic-free. Like Grove's concentrated cleaners and refillable glass bottles, they are friendlier to the planet and twice as effective as the leading natural brands. Switch to sustainable products for every room in your home, from laundry care to pet products, and more. Grove Collaborative has you covered with safe formulas and refillable packaging that never compromise on performance. I just put in my first order with Grove. I got the Paw Sense odor and stain remover that will be much safer for my puppy, Carlene. He is mostly potty trained, but with occasional accidents, so I am so glad to have a natural, safe product to use. Join over 2 million households already already shopping sustainably at Grove. Go to grove.com/southernfried today to get a free gift set worth up to $50 with your first order. Plus, shipping is fast and free. Get started right now at grove.com/southernfried. grove.com/southernfried. Justice is exactly what Memphis police were searching for. They got straight to work trying to find Lorenzen's killer or killers. But they faced a steep uphill battle. Because the dispatcher didn't report the 911 call, 8 days passed before anyone examined the crime scene. Blood evidence, fingerprints, and all kinds of other evidence were compromised during that time. Not to mention what the weather had done to Lorenzen's body. Besides the lack of information obtained at the crime scene, the shooting occurred in a secluded area, so not many people heard the shots, saw suspicious vehicles, or really noticed anything. Even with a $21,000 reward, investigators received less than 60 tips total. And on top of all those challenges, the Memphis police had a large homicide caseload with an average clearance rate of 65%. In 2010 alone, 89 people were killed in the city. Locals were well aware of the problem, knowing it would be difficult for the police to solve the case. Memphians started trying to solve it themselves. The Commercial Appeal wrote, "A Memphis tragedy has morphed into a Memphis whodunit. In 4 short days, we've gone from grieving for a favorite son to sifting through clues." Meanwhile, Shara and her attorney were speaking to the media, sharing her side of the story. A few days after Lorenzen's body was found, attorney Gail Mathis told reporters that 6 weeks before he was killed, 3 men in trench coats came to Shara's house trying to find Lorenzen. They later tried to contact her again and even approached her son at school. Mathis said Shara told her and the police about the men weeks before Lorenzen was killed. Shara also told a friend about the men in trench coats, but in that story, the men went to Lorenzen's dad's car dealership, in addition to Shara's house and her son's school. But when police asked dealership employees if they saw any men in trench coats, they said no. Shara informed numerous other people about the men. After Lorenzen was found dead, she told Deborah about the men, warning her that they were going to start killing the kids. Shara also detailed the same story to Lorenzen's friend and roommate after he died. Michael recalled, "She told me about guys coming by her house looking for Lorenzen, but she also said that those guys came by his daddy's car shop, which they have no recollection of." When the Commercial Appeal asked Shara about the men, she said, quote, "I mean, I try not to even think about things like that. If I said it happened, it happened. I mean, I don't want to go over that." However, investigators received numerous tips that they should look into Shara. Lorenzen's personal assistant, Wendy, even handed over voice recordings of Shara threatening to kill Lorenzen if she found him with another woman. Wendy later told WREG, quote, "They were very, very concerning, threatening in nature, very, very off-key. She was very, very jealous and very, very insecure." Detectives did investigate Shara, and what they found was pretty suspicious. Not only was Shara the last known person to see Lorenzen alive, she was the trustee for his $1 million life insurance policy. That may not seem like a lot of money to an NBA player's wife, but Shara was $3 million in debt. $1 million could really change things for her. On August 1st, investigators reached Shara's house and spoke with neighbors. One woman named Patricia said that on the night of July 18th, Lorenzen and a friend lit a bonfire in Shara's backyard fire pit. Patricia thought it was weird considering it was like one of the hottest days of the year, she said. Weather records show the temperature being above 80 degrees with 77% humidity at 10 p.m., way too hot for a bonfire. Detectives paid close attention to the fire pit, trying their hardest to find anything Lorenzen may have burned, but there wasn't anything left. However, inside Shara's house, they found pieces of metal and a letter addressed to Shara and Lorenzen, both burned. Following the search of her house, Shara hired a defense attorney. Investigators brought her in front of a grand jury, but no charges were filed. By the end of 2010, investigators were no closer to solving Lorenzen's murder. All they had were theories, including one that Lorenzen was killed in a professional hit. This theory was based on the fact that Lorenzen's necklace and watch were still on his body, meaning robbery wasn't the motive. And since the murder scene was a few miles from the airport, the hitman could have killed Lorenzen and then quickly hopped a plane out of town. Investigators even had a theory on who ordered the hit. A few years before he was killed, Lorenzen sold two luxury cars to a man named Bobby Cole, who was connected to Craig Petty's, a Memphis drug kingpin with connection to Mexican cartels. Although the cars were sold to Bobby, they were still registered in Lorenzen's name. In 2007, Bobby Cole was indicted for drug dealing. As part of a deal, he had to give the DEA records of items he purchased with drug money. Lorenzen's two cars were on the list. The DEA interviewed Lorenzen, who said he had no idea that Cole purchased the cars through illegal means. Authorities never found a drug connection between Lorenzen and Cole, just the cars. However, homicide detectives thought it was still a possibility that somehow his connection to Cole was enough to get him killed. Another theory is that Lorenzen owed money to someone, and when he couldn't pay, he was killed. Buddy Chapman, the former director of the Memphis Police Force, told Sports Illustrated, quote, "My personal opinion has been all along that he owed a lot of money to the wrong people and that his murder was a message. If you owe us money, you better pay us. It doesn't matter who you are or how important you are, and you need to pay us the entire amount." Lorenzen's friends told Sports Illustrated that any rumors about drugs were untrue. One friend, Ruiz, said, quote, "I never heard anything about drug stuff, and I was with him every day." His assistant, Wendy, added, "I never saw Ren with a shady character, ever." And of course, there was the theory that Shara killed Lorenzen, most likely for the money. Before 2010 was over, Shara spoke with WREG about being a suspect. She said, quote, "You have to blame somebody. Everybody wants to blame somebody. Everybody wants closure." When asked about the financial state she was in after the divorce, Shara replied, "I was married to an NBA basketball player for 13 years. My watch is a car. My ring is a house. I have 12 house notes in my ear right now. I'm just saying." Movement in Lorenzen's case came to a halt as tips stopped coming in and the media focused less on the story. In the summer of 2011, there were a handful of articles for the one-year anniversary, and a new lead detective was assigned to the case. But there was still no progress. In the fall of 2011, Shara received the $1 million payout for Lorenzen's life insurance. If you'll recall, the policy was set up during the divorce so that in the event of Lorenzen's death, the money would be put into an account for the children with Shara as the trustee. Within 10 months of receiving the payout, Shara had drained the account of everything but $5.05. Later, when she had to explain exactly how the money was spent, Shara said she invested in property in her children's names. But here's how she really spent it. $339,000 was used to purchase a home that she did put in her children's names. $69,000 was spent on furniture for the new house. $32,000 on an Escalade. $11,750 on a trip to New York City. $34,000 on attorneys. And $344,000 on cash withdrawals or checks made out to herself. Shara's son, Lorenzen Jr., told the LA Times, "All that money she so-called blew, it wasn't spent on anybody else. She spent it on us. She don't care about anything else but her kids." Besides a court filing excoriating Shara for a lack of prudent financial judgment, she didn't face any consequences for spending all of her children's money. Lorenzen's father, Herb, did sue Shara, which started a years-long court case. Meanwhile, Shara became a minister and helped start a charity for inner-city children called Born to Prosper. However, its nonprofit status was revoked by the IRS in 2013 for not filing returns. In March 2014, Shara remarried, a Shelby County Sheriff's deputy named Reginald Robinson. 9 months later, she published a book called Mr. Tell Me Anything, a roman, Clef, about an NBA player who moved to Memphis and married an older woman named Sharon. Shara told the Commercial Appeal that 99.9% of the book is the truth. She only changed the names. One story from the book is about how Shara found Lorenzen in bed with another woman who she refers to as Miss Honey Blonde. I will call her Honey. In the story, Shara followed Lorenzen and Honey to a house. Once there, Shara climbed through an open window while wearing Gucci stiletto boots, then confronted the couple in a violent manner. Honey went to hide in a bathroom, but Shara kicked in the door and then dragged her from the bathroom by her hair. Shara insulted Honey while hitting her on the head, and when she was done, Shara went to Lorenzen, slapped him with her car keys in her hand, and then left the house as he was bleeding. Shara wrote, quote, "After a spurt of infidelity by her basketball husband, Sharon decided on a 12-carat tennis bracelet or a diamond tennis necklace. This fiasco would call for a little extra." Shara told the Commercial Appeal that this story was completely true. It happened toward the beginning of a season where Lorenzen made $9 million. She could have left then, she said, taking half of his money, but she chose not to because she loved him. As you can imagine, many people were offended by Shara's book. Lorenzen's friend and roommate, Michael, told the Commercial Appeal, "She threw him all the way up under the bus. I don't know if it's to gain income or I don't know what she's doing, but she has to think about her kids too. She's throwing their dad all the way up under the bus, making him look bad. He was a hero to many people in Memphis, and this is someone you claim to love? It's so puzzling." When the Commercial Appeal journalist Mark Parascia asked Shara about the book in July 2015, she said she didn't care what people thought about it. In fact, she was writing a sequel that would be released soon, adding, quote, "The truth is a thing that sets you free, okay? The book is the truth." In early 2015, Shara met Kelvin, a journalist interested in writing a story about her. Within a week or two of their first meeting, Shara was cheating on her new husband with Kelvin. A few months later, she got divorced and moved in with Kelvin in Sugar Land, Texas, bringing her children with her. Kelvin later said that while Shara had already run through the $1 million insurance payout, she was still spending money like crazy. She would sell property or other assets she got in her divorce from Lorenzen. Shara also frequently paced the street in her bathrobe, shouting into her phone. Kelvin had no idea what the conversations were about, but they could have been in relation to Herb's lawsuits against Shara. Things weren't going well in that arena. In February 2016, she petitioned the court to take money from his estate to pay for alimony and child support payments that Lorenzen failed to make prior to his death. But here's the thing. For years, she repeatedly told people and posted on social media about how well Lorenzen took care of her and the kids post-divorce. The court denied her claim. She later appealed and lost. According to the LA Times, a few nights each week, Shara retreated to the couple's walk-in closet to, quote, pray, usually with a pillow and blanket. Most of the closet belonged to her, filled with mink coats, Rolex watches, about 300 pairs of shoes, more than 200 purses, and an abundance of designer clothing. Kelvin sometimes heard crying and incomprehensible speech coming from the closet. One night, Shara came to Kelvin and played Lorenzen's 911 call. She asked if he could hear a voice on the recording, and if so, was it a man or woman? He said she had a scared look on her face. In early 2017, Shara and Kelvin broke up, and she and the children moved to California, where her brother Marcus lived. While there, she married her third husband, Tim Robertson, a man she knew from back in Tennessee. Meanwhile, Lorenzen's mother, Deborah, worked to solve her son's murder. She had copies of police evidence binders and news clippings, and she interrogated Lorenzen's friends and acquaintances, many of whom were actually offended by her questioning. But Deborah didn't care. In October 2015, she told John Wertheim from Sports Illustrated, who was collaborating with Fox Sports on an investigation, quote, I want to keep my son's name out there because his name came down in Memphis trash. As long as I got blood still running warm in my body, I'm going to be doing something. Ain't nobody going to tell me when I'm tired of doing something for my child. Nuh-uh. I'm from Mississippi. You can't piss in my face and tell me it's right. I'm going to taste the salt. They killed my child. Deborah's family members were scared that she would be killed for asking questions, but she told them, I ain't afraid of death, and I ain't playing. The feisty lady kept a notebook of her funeral and burial wishes ready to go at all times. When the journalist asked Deborah what she thought happened to Lorenzen, she immediately said Shara had something to do with it. Interestingly enough, when Fox Sports' Matt Schleff asked Shara if she had anything to do with Lorenzen's murder, she never said no. Instead, she said, quote, at first, I'm a wife, then I'm a mother, and thirdly, I'm an author. The law enforcement should do what's best to find out who's the killer. Schleff followed up with, you obviously understand why I had to ask that. Shara answered by saying, I do, but I'm a wife, a mother, an author. I let people do what they think they're good at doing, and I just do what I think I'm good at doing. They need to spend time and focus and find out what happened to him. We all need to know. In early June of 2016, members of the multi-agency gang unit spoke with Shara's cousin, Jimmy Martin, who said he did not kill Lorenzen, but he did know who did. Martin, a former Navy man turned rapper and producer, was serving a 20-year sentence for the 2007 fatal shooting of his then 24-year-old girlfriend. Jimmy Martin was found guilty of second-degree murder and sentenced to 20 years in 2009. Jimmy had actually spoken with detectives about Lorenzen's murder all the way back in 2012. It's unclear what he told them or why it took until 2016 for them to investigate his claims. I have my theories, which we'll get to later. We do know at least one thing he told them. Now that he was behind bars, he felt more comfortable telling police what he knew. He said Shara was crazy, and he was so scared she would kill him if he said anything. So in early June 2016, Jimmy met with the multi-agency gang unit. They made a deal. If he truthfully and fully confessed to what he knew, he would receive full immunity. Martin took the deal and started telling investigators everything they had been wanting to know since July 2010. I'm going to pause now for a final word from today's sponsors. Just like your skin, your hair is completely unique and deserves products that address its specific needs. That's why I think you'll love Function of Beauty. Function of Beauty is the world's first fully customizable hair care that creates individually filled shampoos, conditioners, styling, and treatment formulas based on your hair now and where you want it to go. Here's how it works. First, take the quick hair quiz to build your hair profile and select 5 hair goals like lengthen, volumize, and oil control. Does your hair get frizzy in the winter? But oily in the summer? Function formulations are meant to be changed when your needs change. Next, choose your color and fragrance, or go dye or fragrance free. Then get your freshly filled formula delivered straight to your door and prepare for good hair days ahead. Say goodbye to generic hair care for good today. Go to functionofbeauty.com/SFTC to take your hair goals quiz and you'll save 25% on your first order. Go to functionofbeauty.com/SFTC to let them know you heard about it from our show and to get 25% off your first order. That's functionofbeauty.com/SFTC to take your hair quiz and save 25% off your first order. Thrive Cosmetics are high-performance beauty and skincare products made with clean ingredients. I love how easily Thrive fits into my daily routine, from their skincare to their makeup. Thrive makes me feel beautiful without any hassle. Their Overnight Sensation Brightening Sleep Mask restores, hydrates, and rejuvenates my skin with just one night's sleep. And as I've told you, I use the Brilliant Eye Brightener daily. The cream-to-powder highlighter is so much easier to apply than conventional eyeshadow. And the best part is Thrive's Bigger Than Beauty mission. For every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates to causes that help women thrive, like women who have been unhoused. This is where the cause in Thrive Cosmetics comes from. Now is a great time to try Thrive Cosmetics for yourself. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order when you visit thrivecosmetics.com/southernfried. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/Southern Fried for 15% off your first order. Jimmy Martin detailed a series of meetings he had with Shara and a man named Billy Ray Turner, who owned a landscaping business and did work for Shara. He also attended the same church as Shara and was having a sexual relationship with her at the time of Lorenzen's murder. Investigators already knew the name Billy Ray Turner. Along with Shara, he had been named in multiple tips called into the Memphis Crime Stoppers. Two of the 59 total tips in Lorenzen's case were about Turner. Both callers had felt like he had done it. According to the executive director of Crime Stoppers, the tips were passed on to detectives but were deemed as having no value per homicide. It's interesting that detectives didn't find the tips about Turner credible, given the fact that he did have a history of violence. In 1992, he was arrested for aggravated assault and aggravated kidnapping after he pointed a gun at his ex-girlfriend and tried to pull her into a vehicle. He then pointed the gun at the ex-girlfriend's brother when he tried to help his sister. That same year, he was also arrested for selling cocaine. In the end, Turner received a 4-year sentence. When he was released, he was arrested for criminal trespass. Following that conviction, Turner seemingly got his life together. He started the landscaping business and became a deacon at Mount Olive No. 1 Baptist Church, the same church Shara attended, and it did seem like he had turned his life around. That is, until he met Shara Wright. Shara's cousin, Jimmy Martin, told investigators that their first meeting took place in April or May 2010, just a few months after Lorenzen and Shara's divorce was finalized. Martin was out on bond, awaiting his trial for the murder of his girlfriend. Shara had been paying for his attorneys. She showed up at Jimmy's place to ask him if he would train her dog. He went back with her to Memphis, where they met with Billy Ray Turner. That's when Shara announced that she wanted to talk to them about Lorenzen. She claimed that he had taken out a hit on her, and if she didn't do something soon, she would be dead. Shara told the two men, "It's either me or him. They needed to kill Lorenzen, and soon. Plus, with Lorenzen dead, she would get access to his $1 million life insurance." At the time, Jimmy Martin thought Shara was going through some things and was just talking. Knowing what it was like to take a person's life, Jimmy told Shara, "This is not the business you want to be in." But Shara would hear nothing of it, so Martin and Turner entertained her by talking about different ways to murder Lorenzen. Jimmy felt the whole thing was crazy, but he didn't tell Shara his true feelings because he said he didn't want to rock the boat. He later found out Billy Ray Turner felt the same. When Martin and Turner left Shara's house that night, they were now involved in a plot to murder the face of Memphis. In late June 2010, Shara contacted Jimmy Martin and demanded that he drive to Atlanta and kill Lorenzen that evening. Then she gave him a car with 3 guns, money, and marijuana in the trunk. Jimmy Martin had no interest in truly killing Lorenzen, so he lied to Shara and said he drove to Lorenzen's place in the Atlanta suburbs but couldn't find him. Then he told investigators that Shara got mad because she knew he was lying. It didn't take long for Shara to contact her cousin again. She told him to go to Atlanta, but this time he had to take Turner with him to make sure the job got done. Shara had already set the scene for them. She had recently shown up randomly at Lorenzen's place so she could leave a window unlocked. Martin and Turner grabbed their guns and hopped in Turner's car for the 6-hour drive to Atlanta. When they got to his condo, they entered through the window Shara unlocked days before. But once inside, they realized someone was asleep on the couch, and it wasn't Lorenzen. In fact, he wasn't even there. Jimmy and Billy Ray were both relieved as they drove back to Memphis, discussing how the murder plot was ridiculous and getting out of hand. When Shara found out the plot had failed, she was not happy. On July 18th, the night Lorenzen was murdered, Jimmy was at home in Batesville. He tried to call Turner, but could not get through, and he couldn't get a hold of Shara either. Shara eventually called him back and announced that she and Billy Ray Turner were coming to Batesville to pick up Turner's car that they had left parked at Jimmy's. When they arrived, Jimmy said they seemed spooked and dodged his questions. He knew something was up, but he didn't know exactly what. A few days later, Shira called Jimmy and asked him if he had a metal detector. He told her his mom had one. After picking up the metal detector, Shira showed up at Jimmy's place and said she needed his help finding something in Memphis. On the drive, Shira talked about how the plan to kill Lorenzen had gone through. She had lured him to the field by asking if he would go with her to the field to make sure nothing happened while she met up with someone who owed her money. Just after midnight, Lorenzen and Shira arrived at the field. The man Shira was getting money from was there, but it was Billy Ray Turner, and that's when they ambushed Lorenzen Wright. Jimmy Martin later testified, Shira told him a lot of things about murdering Lorenzen, but the one thing that stood out the most was that when he had his back to them, they started chasing and firing at him. Lorenzen jumped over a fence like a deer, but he fell and they caught up to him. Shira and Turner both fired shots into Lorenzen, killing him. As they were fleeing, they dropped one of the guns in the field, which is why she needed the metal detector. Shira and Jimmy picked up Turner, and then they went to the field to look for the gun and clean up the crime scene as best they could. They found the gun, picked up shell casings, and also cut part of the barbed fence Lorenzen had tried to jump over. When they were finished, Jimmy, Shira, and Billy Ray Turner went their separate ways. At a later time, Billy Ray asked Jimmy to help him get rid of one of the guns. Jimmy agreed and went with him 90 miles away to a murky lake located next to a landfill in Walnut, Mississippi. As Billy Ray filed off the serial number, he told Jimmy he was still shaken from shooting Wren. Then he threw the gun in the lake, and the two men went back to Memphis. On June 27, 2017, an FBI dive team went into the lake and were able to locate the gun. It was a semi-automatic, 9mm Smith & Wesson pistol. Ballistics matched it to some of the shell casings found near Lorenzen's body. Authorities had finally located one of the murder weapons. This information was not released to the public for months, and you'll see why in a minute. According to the LA Times, Jimmy Martin had told investigators about the gun in the lake earlier in the investigation. They searched the lake, but didn't find the gun. This tidbit of information makes me think that Martin gave investigators a confession back in 2012. To corroborate Martin's story, they searched the lake for the gun, but were unsuccessful. Not finding the gun may have led investigators to disregard Jimmy Martin's story. When he went back to them in 2016, they had had 4 years of no leads and were desperate to solve the case. So they tried again, and this time they were able to find the gun in the murky lake. This is all just conjecture on my part, just a theory, but it does make sense. On November 7, 2017, authorities obtained a search warrant to tap both Shira and Billy Ray Turner's phones. 2 days later, they released information about the FBI dive team finding the gun to the public. Then they listened as Shira called Turner to tell him the bad news. She sounded distressed. 4 days later, Shira flew from California to Memphis, and while there, used her friend's phone to text Turner saying she wanted to see him. They met at a friend's house, not knowing the police were outside taking photos. On December 5, 2017, 46-year-old Billy Ray Turner was arrested. At the station, he told investigators that while he did have an intimate relationship with Shira, he played no part in Lorenzen's murder. When asked about the trip to Atlanta, where he and Jimmy Martin were supposed to kill Lorenzen, Turner said he didn't go there with Martin. He went alone to visit family members who he couldn't remember the names of. Getting nowhere with Turner, investigators showed him a picture of the murder weapon they pulled from the lake. He started acting nervous, and soon after, the interview ended. Turner was charged with first-degree murder, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder, and attempted first-degree murder were added later. His bond was set at $15 million. When Turner's house was searched, investigators found numerous guns. As a felon, he was not allowed to have weapons, so he was charged with two counts of possessing a weapon as a convicted felon. After pleading guilty, Turner was sentenced to 16 years for the weapons charges alone. Following Turner's arrest, Memphis Police Director Michael Rawlings told the public in an almost I-told-you-so way, quote, "The Lorenzen Wright case has stayed in the public eye for many years. We said many times that we had never stopped investigating." Lorenzen's mother, Deborah, told the media about Turner's arrest, quote, "It makes me breathe again. It makes me really feel good. My mom is crying. She's so happy to get this over with because she's getting older. We haven't got years and years and years to wait any longer. She's 86, so we need to get this over with." Deborah added that she had looked into lots of suspects during her own investigation, but she never, never, never heard of Billy Ray Turner. It seems like no one else thought Turner was involved either, or at least thought that he could be involved in a murder. Turner was known to help people in the neighborhood with their cars and homes. He was a deacon at a church. He was a good guy. His neighbor Terrence told the Commercial Appeal, quote, "I couldn't believe it when I heard it. He seems to be a nice person." Another longtime friend said, "I never would believe he did stuff like that because he's a really nice person. He helped me whenever I needed it. I don't think he did it. Somebody framed him, probably." On December 15th, 46-year-old Shara was arrested in California. She was charged with first-degree murder, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder, and attempted first-degree murder. Her bond was set at $20 million. Shara and Turner would not face the death penalty due to Lorenzen's family's wishes. Following Shara's arrest, Lorenzen's mother Deborah told the media, "Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. They got her. They got her. They need to bury her." Deborah also talked about how she hadn't been able to speak with or visit her grandkids. She said they were hostile because they had believed their mom was innocent. They believed Shara's story that mysterious gunmen killed their father in a drug deal. Deborah said, "They're telling them we lied, that mama ain't done nothing. Their mama done programmed them for 7 years. 7 years. Now they believe all this mess." Now that investigators had Shara and Turner in custody, they were able to search their phones. They found a treasure trove of evidence, dating all the way back to the planning phase of Lorenzen's murder. Investigators found that Shara, Martin, and Turner discussed their plans via message, including code, as if they were planning a party. In the days leading up to Lorenzen's murder, Shara, Turner, and Martin called each other multiple times. On July 17th, the day before Lorenzen flew to Memphis, Shara sent him a series of sexually explicit text messages. She was luring him to his death. The next day, Lorenzen flew to Memphis and went to visit Shara. It would seem that she did keep some kind of hold on him. Records showed that 25 minutes before Lorenzen was killed, Sherry texted Billy Ray Turner, quote, "I'm going to need my commission. You owe me, boy." Within 2 minutes of Lorenzen's call to 911, Turner made and received multiple calls. They all used the same cell tower as Lorenzen, meaning they were in the same area. One of the calls came in at 12:12 a.m., the same time Lorenzen called 911. It was Jimmy Martin, and he was not in the same area as them. Shara's phone did not show up in the same area as Billy Ray Turner and Lorenzen because she didn't bring her phone. When looking into how Shara spent Lorenzen's insurance money, investigators found out that in February 2012, she purchased $5,000 worth of lawn equipment. The next month, Billy Ray Turner opened Ray's Landscaping Services. Investigators also found that after they released information that the gun had been found in the lake, Shara searched the internet for multiple questions like, "How long do fingerprints last on a gun in the water?" and "Can fingerprints last for 7 years?" And following Turner's arrest, she searched the internet for articles about him. I'm going to pause now for a short commercial break. Investigators also continued receiving tips about Turner and Shara's involvement in Lorenzen's murder. Months after Turner and Shara were arrested, detectives received a tip that the car Turner owned at the time of Lorenzen's murder was about to be scrapped by his cousin. When detectives arrived, they found that the car had been dragged out of the woods by the cousin. Inside, they found wire cutters, further corroborating Jimmy Martin's statement about going with Shara and Turner to clean up the crime scene. While investigators were looking through phone records and new tips, Shara was in jail, racking up infraction after infraction. In the first year and a half after her incarceration, she received 51 write-ups, many of them for extreme behavior. In March 2018, after one infraction, Shara began screaming out of her cell, "Go get the Sarge. You can't sanction me. My daughter's birthday is tomorrow." She continued screaming and yelling, eventually stripping naked. She refused to get dressed, so the officers taped a sheet of paper over the bottom portion of her cell window. Later, she calmed down. On May 29th, during a security check, officers found Shara flooding her cell. They turned off the water, but that didn't stop her. She got naked and started pushing the water out into the day room while yelling, "I'm going swimming. I'm going swimming, y'all." On October 5th, officers had to conduct a strip search before taking Shara into a court hearing. When they told her to take off her clothes, she became combative. "I guess she only wants to get naked when she can make others feel uncomfortable, not the other way around." When she finally took her clothes off and squatted, Shara started dancing and told one of the female officers, "You just want to see me naked." Officers told Shara she was being inappropriate, and she said, quote, "You could have at least thrown me some dollars." But it would seem most of this was an act. On October 8th, Shara was found competent to stand trial. WREG reported, "The incident slowed after she was deemed mentally fit." In the 10 or so months prior to the evaluation, she received 30 infractions. In the next 10 months, she received only 21. During this time, Shara wrote to the LA Times about her innocence. She ended the letter with a plea for three things: donate to the GoFundMe for her children set up for her bail fund, write to her in jail, and to buy the sequel to Mr. Tell Me Anything. Shara signed off with, "Stay tuned for my upcoming book during the Christmas holiday. Be blessed." After 2 months, the GoFundMe had raised $0. Then, on July 25th, 2019, Shara pleaded guilty to facilitated first-degree murder and facilitated attempted first-degree murder. By taking a deal with the prosecution, she avoided a possible life sentence and was instead sentenced to 30 years. Shara's guilty plea was unexpected, especially considering how she was so adamant about her innocence. However, even after she pleaded guilty, she told the media that, quote, "Everything is not what it seems. She was only pleading guilty for the sake of her children." Which is interesting, since Deborah Marion, Lorenzen's mother, begged Shara at her sentencing hearing to let her see her grandchildren, most of whom she had not seen in 9 years. Shara quite literally tore their family apart. Deborah spoke emotionally about one of her granddaughters, who she said just wanted to come home and make chicken and dumplings with her. Shara did ask the judge if she could respond, but her counsel advised her not to. Shara's defense team told Fox 13 Memphis that if they had gone to trial, they would have told the jury that Shara did plan the murder of Lorenzen, but only because he had beat and bruised her for years. They claimed that during that time he beat her so badly her face was fractured and over time became deformed. This seems like a particularly ridiculous claim that could easily be disproven. But one attorney said, quote, "She feared that Mr. Wright would never leave her alone, and she recruited Billy Turner to kill Mr. Wright because she was sick of getting beaten." Had they gone to trial, the attorneys would have called numerous witnesses, supposedly, to testify about the abuse they had witnessed against Shara and the children. On March 16, 2020, Shara filed a petition for post-conviction relief on multiple grounds, including her guilty plea that was unlawfully induced, her confession was coerced, she was denied effective counsel, the police committed perjury and misconduct, and much more. Shara's petition is full of incredible accusations, including that she was held in isolation for 18 months straight and was tortured. She said she gave the staff 20 documented pages of abuse, but no one helped her. In fact, they kept her without a roommate so that they could continue abusing her without anyone noticing. Shara claimed staff members listened in on meetings with her attorney and personal phone calls, then told other inmates what they heard so that everyone would talk badly about her. Her defense was compromised because the staff made her wear a red shirt to torture her and pressure her into considering deals. She said they kept her family away from her by telling them lies, and members of the prosecution team threatened her children and called them racial slurs. They claimed that the prosecution had also visited Shara in jail and asked her, "Do you know what happens to little black boys that try to help their mommies?" All of Shara's claims were completely delusional. While waiting for the court to make a decision on her petition, Shara spoke to Lisa Salters for ESPN's E60 special on Lorenzen and repeated her claims of innocence, most of which sounded so delusional they would be difficult to completely quote here. When Salters asked if she didn't kill Lorenzen, then who did, Shara said it was her cousin Jimmy Martin. In a long-winded explanation that makes zero sense, Shara said, quote, "I mean, you could literally put the gun in his hand. He was a couple of weeks away from having his murder trial. Lorenzen was blackmailing him, basically, because he moved drugs. And the whole thing was, it benefited him in both ways. I mean, it's plenty of motives there." In August 2021, Shara withdrew her petition for post-conviction relief. She did not state a reason why, but her attorney said, "She's not seeking that anymore. She's just going to go ahead and serve her sentence." The judge told Shara that once she withdraws the petition, she will never have the chance to file another one. Shara went ahead with her decision to withdraw, and the judge accepted. Last month, on March 14, 2022, jury selection for Billy Ray Turner's trial took place in Shelby County Criminal Court. The next day, opening statements began. The prosecution said Lorenzen was killed because of greed and jealousy. Shara recruited Turner, who prosecutors called her romantic secret interest, and her cousin Jimmy Martin to help kill Lorenzen. After Martin and Turner's first attempt to kill Lorenzen in Atlanta failed, Shara lured Lorenzen into the field in Memphis, where she and Turner shot and killed him. The prosecution played the 911 call Lorenzen made right before he was murdered in cold blood. When it was over, the prosecutor told the jury, "This is what it sounds like to kill a man," later adding, "It took an evil heart to do this." The prosecution's main witness and evidence came from Jimmy Martin. After testifying about his role in Lorenzen's murder, the prosecution asked why he didn't do anything to stop it. Jimmy Martin answered, "When someone comes to you with a murder plot, they are planning to kill someone they love. You were like the lowest man on the totem pole. They have no problem killing you." The defense said Billy Ray Turner was innocent, that the real killers were Shara and Jimmy Martin. They told the jury that Turner had made mistakes when he was younger, but since he was released from prison, he had become an honest man. He started attending church and opened his own landscaping business. They also said Jimmy Martin was not a credible witness. He had made a deal so that he wouldn't get in trouble. So what did he have to lose by lying? The prosecution rebutted this statement by telling the jury that part of Martin's deal was that he had to tell the truth. If he didn't, he would be prosecuted. Despite saying there was a lot of evidence pointing towards Turner's innocence, the defense only called one witness, a woman named Jennifer, who testified that Turner had been at a cookout at her Collierville home on the evening of July 18th, around 2 hours before Lorenzen was killed. Billy Ray Turner did not testify on his own behalf, and Shara Wright did not testify against him. On March 21st, after deliberating for around 2 hours, the jury found Billy Ray Turner guilty on all charges. He was immediately sentenced to life for first-degree murder. For the other two charges, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and attempted first-degree murder, he faces additional life sentences and is scheduled to be sentenced next month, May of 2022. Following Billy Ray Turner's conviction, the judge told Lorenzen's mother, Deborah, that Lorenzen was a sacred son of Memphis, and that while the trial might not bring her closure, she should celebrate the good about her son. Outside the courtroom, Deborah told the media, "It'll never be closure because I'll never see my son again. This conviction is just some satisfaction for me and my family." As of this recording, Turner's current location hasn't been updated on the Tennessee Department of Corrections website. Shara is currently incarcerated in the Deborah K. Johnson Rehabilitation Center, a minimum restricted prison. According to the Tennessee Department of Corrections, Shara's first parole hearing is scheduled for May 11, 2022. If she is never paroled, she will be released on July 10, 2046, when she is 75 years old. God willing. As I mentioned in the opening, Lorenzen Wright was a literal giant at 6'11" tall, but he was a spiritual giant to his family and the people of Memphis. It's hard to believe a man like that has to retire at the age of 34, an age when so many adults are finally settling into their first careers. Lorenzen was seeking his second act, his life after basketball, but also trying to forge a new life without his toxic wife. Because of her selfish greed, we are only left with the golden dream of what this loving, generous, and inspired young man could have done with the rest of his life. His mother grieved heavily, though she was sustained by her fight for the truth. But his six children are left without their father and with their mother in prison, a woman who lied to them and confused them so much when they lost their dad in such a horrific act of violence and betrayal. Lorenzen's son Shamar recently reunited with his grandmother Deborah after almost a decade of estrangement because of Shara's lies. The very picture of his handsome father, 22-year-old Shamar Wright, is following in Lorenzen's footsteps, playing college basketball in Illinois. He told reporters he always focuses on pushing forward and tries to shine a light on that you can make it through bad things. Hopefully the rest of his brothers and sisters have been able to find peace too. There is so much pain in the truth of their father's murder, but now that there is finally justice, we can hope and pray that they can also focus on healing and remember their father's legacy of love and generosity. Southern Fried True Crime is hosted and produced by me, Erica Kelly. Today's episode was researched and written by Haley Gray, with additional writing by me. And a special thanks to Haley for her Google alerts and being ready to rock this script as soon as Turner's trial ended. Southern Fried's original music is by Rob Harrison of Gamma Radio, and the original graphic art is by Cully Horner. If you have any case suggestions, please visit my website, southernfriedtruecrime.com, and go to the Listener Suggestion tab. If you have submitted a case suggestion in the last few months, please resubmit it on the website. And please remember that I do not accept suggestions on social media private messages. With three platforms to manage, it is very overwhelming for me. I hope you understand. But please come join our Facebook group, Southern Fried True Crime Fans Discussion Group, where we swap recipes, worship Dolly Parton, and share memes. I much prefer spending my social media time in our lovely group. We do, of course, discuss true crime, not just Southern Fried, but all kinds, but it is still very much a Southern lifestyle group. Our group is a safe and fun corner of Facebook, and by God, we mean it when we say no shit ass is allowed. It's not just a motto, it's how we run the group. If you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and please tell a friend or rate and review on iTunes. I'm also on all large platforms like iHeart, Stitcher, and Spotify. Until next time, thanks so much for listening. Y'all take care.